Well, good morning, and thank you so much for having me here. I was, as Elena mentioned, this just sort of came about sort of coincidentally. I want to say this is, feels really strange here, but I'm a professor. It feels right. I guess, sage on stage, that's it. You know, ask a professor to speak on anything, really, whether it's in field or not, doesn't matter, a certain amount of time, and he or she will comply very gladly. It is a beautiful morning. That's just coincidental, because as the call to worship that we had this morning says, it has nothing to do with weather. It's being in community that makes it a beautiful morning for me. And this is a very peculiar service, and I recognize it as such. But it would be more peculiar, perhaps, not to have any music at all, as the poor rabbi was discovering over the course of a year or so. It's something that can build up, but I don't know, except for exceptional circumstances that I have. Exceptional circumstances, certain very limited family gatherings, perhaps a church gathering, a congregation of any faith community typically has music with it. And of course, we were talking just a moment ago about the rabbi. The rabbi and Judaism and some liturgical music is an ancient tradition. The tradition of hymn singing, it's so important. They have a cantor. I mean, every synagogue would have a professional singer. It is that important. And how did that get into this service today? I think you might be a little bit curious. I mean, we don't often have bossa nova offertories. I mean, that's pretty, it's a little out there. I mean, I recognize it. Well, it comes from a natural place. I was a weird kid. I mean, just to give you a little background, I mean, I never in my life had piano lessons. We had an organ. I don't know how many of you remember the little Wurlitzer home organs, or the Hammond home organs, the spinet organs with the split double keyboard and the eight pedals. And so they were a frequent feature in middle class homes when I was growing up. Now, good luck in finding one. Go to Craigslist, maybe you can find one. They will give it to you for free. it's sad, but that's the case. But I did actually take organ lessons, and I learned my way around the keyboard, but it was actually an organ keyboard. Well, the weirdness didn't stop there. I mean, you know, piano lessons, sure, but organ lessons? That was me. I wanted to learn the organ specifically, and my parents were good enough to, they made some sacrifices and gave me lessons. So, another thing. You know, the New York Times, the banner of the New York Times, in a very particular type of script, and sometimes they call it black letter, old English, so there's all sorts of names, Gothic. Well, when I was about third or fourth grade, I wanted to write like that. Over the course of the years, I taught myself calligraphy. Apparently, I had just a real fascination for ancient writings. I mean, that's not normal, I don't guess. And I was also fascinated by the liturgical traditions I grew up in. I grew up a very sincere Catholic boy, and gosh, we have in the Catholic Church, and not exclusively, other high church traditions, particularly the Anglican and Episcopal churches, still have the sung liturgies frequently. At one point, when I was still taking organ lessons, I composed a mass, and my organ teacher very good-naturedly sent it in to, I could not tell you what the name of the organization is about, but I got an award. I mean, it's like, well, that was nice. I mean, it was nice, and the fascination with church music never really left me. So how did this come about here with the, all these sung elements? Well, some of that's an echo of my liturgical background. And we, both here at Community and my little congregation in Red River, we share a lot of elements in common in our worship. You know, some things are slightly placed a little differently or so, but I think Elena would confirm for you that I believe you said, Elena, that what I have submitted, you said, mapped nicely onto what you do. That's an extra bonus. But these standard elements, I thought, well, you know, we recite, we at Red River, we use exactly the same covenant, you know, exactly the same. The same extinguishing the chalice. And I thought, what would it be like to sing those? You know, again, drawing on this tradition. So, drawing on this tradition, so I fooled around with it. I mean, people like to sing, generally, except some people don't like to sing in church. They'll be glad to sing the country head on the in their car, but in public, somehow it becomes inhibiting. Believe me, it hasn't inhibited me. You could, if you're paying close attention, it's like, ah, whatever. Close enough. So, but music makes a gathering special. And to my way of thinking, it is almost the closest thing that we have to real life magic. I mean, it's, was reading or listening to the reading about the therapist, or the rabbi too. It can really, sometimes I will be playing for myself, you know, quiver lip, single tear. It will, my music, just playing music will affect me deeply. And I think to myself, I guess I needed that. It's cleansing for me, among other things, besides being fun. It does evoke a range of responses. So I thought I would try to take some things that seem pretty obvious. I mean, these things don't necessarily rhyme, but they can, so but they can be worked with. Add a little repetition. Love is the spirit of the church, and a backbeat. you can do something with that, and that's what I thought I would do. And of course, it's not typical of traditional church music, traditional liturgical music. But we're not really very traditional in a lot of ways. And many of us have claimed the term. Proudly, heretic, because it comes from the Greek meaning to choose. We make our choices, and that's one of the highest things, of course, that we do. The freedom of the pulpit, the freedom of the pew. And that was a great reminder, Elena. Thank you for that. It's like, yeah, you can get out and leave. I mean, yeah, you can vote with your feet. No. But that is so important in our tradition. But another thing that makes this type of music a little peculiar, admittedly, a little peculiar in a church service or something, you call yourselves a church, we call ourselves a church. So we're having church services. But another thing that makes it peculiar is, what's the directionality of this? If you look at theory of worship, and there is such a thing, theory of worship, there's vertical worship and there's horizontal worship. I don't know if you've heard that before, and I'm not an expert on it by any means, but for example, in the Catholic Church, in the, let's say, the more ancient church traditions, the emphasis is vertical. And certainly in the pre-Vatican II churches, everybody faced the altar, the priest faced the altar, It was going up. The worship was intended for God, not to amuse ourselves or to put on a good show. It was like, so as far as, you know, rousing singing, you would, no hand clapping, certainly not. I was a pre-Vatican II kid myself. I was still very young, but I do remember those Latin days and the priest facing away from the membership. So there's that vertical element. And so why would anyone make, you know, try to engage the congregation in, you know, in, I don't know, something less than almost stately, because the idea is that the worship is to please the Lord, not to please ourselves. So it would have to be appropriate to that. Then there's the horizontal plane that people talk about. And without wanting to be offensive, because I've certainly enjoyed taking this perspective as well, you know, in certain denominations or even non-denominational church, you hear about praise teams and worship teams, and we're talking about stagecraft, you know, and lighting and special effects and things of that nature. And I really don't object to it, but that to me seems like a clearly horizontal. This is, we are ministering to ourselves, but there is some aspect of, well, let's be honest, a little showbiz. And, you know, when you hear a bossa nova, that's a little showbizy too. I mean, I own that, okay. But one thing that I really wanted to try to incorporate is an invitation to physicality, to being more present in our bodies, because, I mean, I'll admit to being, I mean, the Unitarian Universalist as a body, we are very smart. I mean, yeah, no, seriously, you look at the demographics, we are extremely smart, and I, as much as anybody else, live in my head. A lot, probably too much. I'd say that as a personal assessment, but I'm certain many of you have heard the joke. Why are Unitarian Universalists so bad at singing? Thank you. Thank you. They're reading ahead to see if they agree with the words. Okay, that is the typical Unitarian Universalist response. Oh, no, I can't sing that. No. There can be some backlash to that, too. For example, if you look in the gray hymnal, you look at the traditional Christmas carols, it's like, and I say, I'm not singing that. I have to sing traditional Christmas carols. So we do indulge ourselves in that. But we are very heady religion, Unitarians as a rule. The Universalists brought more of the, as they say, more of the heart, more of the soul to the body. And I'm beginning to think I might be sort of a closet universalist simply because of wanting to break through my own head and do something that moves me and hopefully something that will move other people. And when we do this sort of